The following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
Who need that? No, no, no. Alawa. Who need that?
Welcome to the Forcecast, your weekly dose of Star Wars news and much more.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it.
All systems have been alerted to your presence, sir.
Check it out, Corporal.
Roger, roger.
Now your hosts of the Forcecast, Jason and Pete.
We would be honored if you would join us.
And welcome to the Forcecast. Your weekly dose of Star Wars. We are the official podcast of TheForce.net and RebelScum.com. Happy to be back. We want to say thank you to our announcer, Jimmy Mack. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
New things for the new year.
That is correct. I am Jason, and with me eternally, my best buddy in the whole wide galaxy, Pete.
Happy New Year, everyone.
And we are delighted to be back with a whole new year's worth of Star Wars. This is the big one.
This is
the 30th anniversary. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than this.
And we're kicking it off with a bang.
We sure are. So we got some housekeeping issues and some things, as always, that we want to mention. First of all, we want to give some love to our friends and our sponsors, the ones that make this show possible, Official Picks. That's officialpicks.com. That's picks with an X.com. Wanted to let you know that there are some new Darth Sidious autographs in stock, signed by the one, the only, Ian McDiarmid. You know, Ian, my buddy.
A difficult autograph to get on your own, to be sure.
Yeah, even if you're crazy and lined up at the stage door when he's coming out, he says, now, which one are we looking at? and also a personalized Mark Hamill autographs available, too. So what a great gift that is. You know, if you got a birthday coming up or an anniversary and you got a Star Wars fan in your life, you know, to, I don't want to give it away, but to Pete, Mark Hamill. So anyway, we want to show our love for Official Picks. Make sure you go over and check them out for all of your autograph and photograph needs. Also, we want to say happy birthday to our own First Lady of Star Wars, the wife of Dustin Roberts, Shannon. She is, he doesn't say how old she is, does he? He's a good husband.
That's right. That's not going all over the net, or else he's not getting to come home.
Right. So we want to say happy birthday to Shannon. And I know that there was a post that Dustin put up at Rebel Scum encouraging total strangers just to email her all day with happy birthday. So I'm hoping that you had a chance to do that. Also, want to thank our good friend John Scolari over there at Dreams and Vision Press. John's been really great at keeping us updated on this book that's coming out, The Art of Ralph McQuarrie. And they're, I believe, from what I understand, they're preparing to begin accepting pre-orders as of the first of the year. So they very well may be doing that right now as we speak. So if you're interested, you want to check it out at RalphMcQuarrie.com or Dreams and Vision, VisionsPress.com. But they're updating the site with pictures from the book and all the details on how they're putting that together. So thanks to John. And if you're interested in getting a copy of that, check it out.
And I have to intervene here with another plug for a great book. I was lucky enough to get the Star Wars poster book by Pete Vilmer and Steve Sansweet for Christmas.
Oh, yeah,
thankfully,
right.
Somebody
yeah.
was listening and gave that to me. And folks, if you haven't seen this, if you haven't checked it out, definitely do yourself a favor and go out and look at it, because it is a fantastic book. There is so much research and things that you would never have known were even related to Star Wars that are brought into the book. So we're looking forward to talking to Pete at some point about the book, but do yourself a favor, go out, check it out. If you are having a birthday or something along those lines where you're looking for a gift and you want to drop a subtle hint to somebody, it's a great book, and it's a nice thick book, a nice coffee table
book.
Well,
you brought it over here to the house on Christmas Eve, and We were flipping through it, and I was like, wow, I've never seen that poster. I've never seen that poster. And particularly some of the international posters are just, some of them are really better than the ones that they released here in the States.
So. Right, and some of them are very obscure, and like you
yeah,
said,
some of them are not as good as the ones they had in the States.
Yeah. You've never seen before. I think there was a couple that were coming from the Soviet Union back in 78. And I kind of just thought it was these horrible, horrible pictures. And they had nothing to do with the Star Wars. They had these green aliens. And I could only envision this as they were giving out jobs in the Soviet Union. And this guy says, I'm one of the greatest surgeons in the world. And they say, no, you draw a poster for upcoming space epic. And then, you know, the beauty of communism. Everybody has a job. And right, you know, they just assign you it. So that's, but it, anyway, getting back to it, it's a great book. And make sure you check it out if you get a chance.
Well, and while we're talking about Pete Vilmer, we want to thank him for the wonderful Christmas card that he sent to you and I. It was we were kind of teasing the folks at Lucasfilm, saying, hey, there's all these Christmas cards going out, and they even put it on the website at StarWars.com. Where's ours? You know, show us some love. And this just goes to show you never know who's listening.
Yes.
And they sent us a Christmas card, and it was too cool. I mean,
it's in the archive.
Oh, and, yes.
It touched only with gloves. So.
Absolutely. So also, we wanted to kind of bring you up to speed on some changes happening here at the Forcecast. And we're tinkering a little bit with the show. We're trying to make the show better. We're listening to the feedback that we've been getting over the last several months, and a lot of it really constructive. And one of the problems is that everybody's got their favorite part of the show. I love the EU stuff. I love the collecting stuff. And then there are people that say, well, I'm really not into the EU, and I'm really not into the collecting. So we're trying to satisfy everybody. So really what we're doing is the Forcecast is going to be your hard Star Wars news, but fear not. If you're really a big fan of EU, you're not going to be disappointed. We're going to have microcasts spread throughout the weeks that are going to, you know, be able to just be specific to EU or specific to collecting. And we're still working out all of the bugs on that. So just bear with us. We haven't forgotten you. And, we hope that you like the new format and some of the changes that we're putting. And if you don't like it, we want to hear from you, too. So either way, let us know. And what better way to do that than our brand new survey that we've got. If you go to theforce.net and you see the show posts when a new episode of the Forcecast or a Microcast comes out, there'll be a button to take a survey. And it's not really all that involved. It's going to take you a couple of minutes. It's anonymous. We don't know who you are. We can't track it. But it is a great way for you to give us feedback. It kind of defines who we're talking to every week, who's listening. And it just helps us build a better show for you guys. So hopefully you'll have take a chance and or take a moment, rather, and fill that out. We've had... Well, a pretty significant number of people doing it already have filled it out, and that information that we're getting is really invaluable. So we really appreciate that. And, one thing that is not going to change... That's right. We're still going to be counting down all the weeks till we get to Celebration 4 in May, Los Angeles. It is the party of definitely the year.
Certainly the Star Wars year.
No doubt about it. What we're doing is counting down the weeks and giving you a tip. So if you're new to the going to some of these big conventions, you won't be lost. Follow our tips and you'll be A-OK. Pete, what do you got for us?
Well, we are at 19 weeks and counting, so we are under 20 weeks, which is it's a little bit nerve-wracking now. It's right around the corner, so you've got to make sure you're all prepared. And we missed a few weeks, so we've got four tips for you this week.
Okay.
First one, bring a camera. Because there's going to be celebrities, there's going to be people in costume, there's going to be exhibits, there's going to be dioramas, there's going to be so many things that you probably will need to bring an extra memory card. But make sure you have a camera, make sure you've got that with you and charged and everything else. And these are three very important things. You want to bring hard copies of all of the confirmations for your hotel, your flights, your purchases of your event passes, and everything along those lines. Doesn't always help you. As Jason and I found out last year at Celebration 3, 2 years ago now, you can have a confirmation for your hotel, and they may just not give you a room. And you have to go to the hotel next door, which is very shady, to say the least. But anyway, make sure you have hard copies of those so you can at least argue with them. Bring your event pass. We can't stress that enough. You want to make sure you have that so you can get in the door. And make sure you have an ID with you so you can identify who you are. And all the information that you're bringing along with you, credit cards or that type of thing, you want to make sure you have that photo ID so that everybody knows you are who you say you are.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other thing I'm going to throw in like a bonus here. How about a checklist of these things?
Yes.
You know, a checklist of things you don't want to forget. I mean, it sounds really simple. Yeah, you don't want to forget your badge, but you know what? You also don't want to forget that you left your wife and best friend in a hotel room without car keys.
Right, and then come up with some really odd schemes in order to get that back together with them. Right, right. But we won't talk about that here.
No.
We can save that for the three-hour convention special to make you feel better about what you did on your way to the convention. So,
19 weeks to go for Celebration.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
Hello there.
You are listening to the Weekly Forcecast.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
The galaxy is listening.
Well, certainly the biggest story coming out early here in 2007 is the Rose Parade and Star Wars' amazing... Well, it was called the Star Wars Spectacular, and it really was spectacular. The presence that Star Wars had in the parade, the two floats, the 200 members of the 501st, the band that played from, Pete, you were telling me...
Grambling State.
Right, Grambling State. Decked out in Imperial officers' uniforms, just absolutely incredible. And, of course, the Grand Marshal, the Maker, GWL, George Lucas himself. So... We've got a real treat coming up later in the show. We have the first part of an interview with Darren Blum, Albin Johnson, Mark Fordham, and Dean Planamura, four incredible members of the 501st. And, of course, Albin is the founder of the 501st. So, and Mark actually played Vader in the parade. You know, there's a number of Vaders throughout the world, but Mark was chosen to be in the parade, so that's very, very cool. So that's going to be coming up. They'll be in the cantina with us. And if you're unfamiliar and didn't catch the parade, now, Pete, I saw it in HD.
As did I.
And really, I can't imagine not seeing it in HD. I mean, I had seen the Rose Parade before, but seeing it in high definition, you gain such a new appreciation for the fact that, you know, all these floats have to be made, or at least the top coat, with organic materials, seeds and flower petals and that sort of thing. And, you know, the Endor float and the Naboo float were just absolutely beautiful. And speaking of beautiful pieces of the float, you had an opportunity to talk to a queen for a day, right?
Kelsey McCullough, who was one of the queens on the float for the Naboo float, joined me for a few minutes, and we'll have a little bit of that later on in the show, but we'll also be playing the full portion of it next week. So,
right.
That was a lot of fun to get to speak with her, and you can just tell how excited she was and how much fun it was for everyone that was there.
Now, if you head over to rebelscum.com, there's a great sort of a summary of events written by Ann Newman. And I'm going to read this verbatim because it's just beautifully written. She says, at 9 a.m. on January 1st, 2007, two large and stunning floats covered in flowers, leaves, seeds, and spice crept up Orange Grove Boulevard in Pasadena, California for the 118th Tournament of Roses Parade. At Del Mar Boulevard, they seamlessly integrated with over 400 marchers carrying a great love of Star Wars in their hearts and either a musical instrument or a burdensome costume on their backs. As the company approached the intersection of Colorado Boulevard, each escorting Imperial officer offered a salute to the Maker himself, George Lucas as he applauded them from the grandstand. And I just got chills reading that because it's just and I just, you know, talked to the guys from the 501st last night. And there's just so many, Albin being there and seeing this organization that he created. You know, he says, you know, it's not the peak. He thinks that there's even better things in store for the group. But I just can't imagine. I just can't. And for George Lucas, too, to see all of these people come together with these, you know, handmade costumes in some cases, just incredible. And it was just a beautiful event. And I don't know. What do you think?
It gave me chills, you know, just to see that. I've watched the Rose Parade in years prior. And I watch it with a passing fancy, usually because on that day there's nothing else on at that point. But this year I actually watched intently. And again, like you said, the intricacy of all the floats and the use of roses and flowers and everything else and the intricate detail that people are made, it's amazing creativity.
Yeah.
And it was outstanding. And the 501st is truly such a great representation of Star Wars fandom. And the only thing I can hope is that they get even more notoriety from this, because not only showing up in the parade, but all the articles that have shown up around the web about what they do and who they are,
right,
and how outstanding the organization is, it's been fantastic. And hopefully that drums up even more great members for them. But I do have to say this, that Bob Eubanks is now on the list.
What list is that?
That is the you are not a friend of Star Wars list. Because at some point he was talking about the 501st and said, these are guys that need something better to do, or something along those lines.
Yeah,
and I just,
you know,
remember hearing it,
too.
And I was like,
I caught that too.
Jerk.
And it's like, you know, pal, the Grand Marshal is George Lucas,
right,
and it's the Star Wars Spectacular.
Yeah.
And
you may want to swallow that comment. And he tried to make it up by saying, oh, you know, they this is great. And,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. I was a little turned off by that. You know, I think the only real disappointment, other than Eubanks' comment, was all the anticipation reading the stories, and it was over so fast.
It was
for me, it was like, this is a Star Wars parade.
Yes.
Everybody else, you know, just disperse.
Right.
Let me see the floats, and you didn't really have a chance. Luckily, I had it TiVo'd, and so I was able to rewind it and whatnot. So that was really the only disappointment. I wanted,
right,
to see more.
Well, that and tacking on to Eubanks' comment, it's always hard to listen to people who have no idea about Star Wars, who have no interest in the community whatsoever, trying to talk about it.
Right. Yeah.
Like they know what's going on.
Right.
And again, that shows my geek is showing, as Jay would say, our friend James Shepherd. But
right,
that made me a little bit cringe a little bit. And I watched the other coverage on NBC with Billy Bush, and for all of his faults, he at least was a little more ingrained with what's going on in the Star Wars universe. So
yeah, well, that's good. And you know, nothing against Bob Eubanks, but it was, I think, kind of a little bit of an irresponsible comment to make. And I hope somebody makes him listen to this podcast and listen to these guys from the 501st, because they really speak from their hearts and they're serious about this, but not to the point where, you know, you think, you know, the Shatner thing, you know, the get a life, people, you know.
Yes.
It's not to that level. I mean,
no.
These guys, they're just wonderful human beings, and they're always thinking about how to make life better for others, and they do it by putting a smile on their faces by showing up in these costumes. And I defy you to be flanked by a dozen stormtroopers and not smile. Or maybe even be a little frightened.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's like, no matter how grown up you are, if you go to Disney World and you see Mickey there, it's going to put a smile on your face.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with these characters. I mean, every time, you know, you and I are at an event and we see these guys, it just, you can't help but just smile. So, anyway, what we're going to do here is play some of Kelsey's interview. And then later in the cantina, we'll have a portion of the interview we did with the fellows from the 501st. And then stay tuned next week for a microcast with the full interview from Kelsey and the full interview from the guys at the 501st as we continue our Rose Parade coverage here at the Forcecast. So without further ado, Pete, you spoke with Kelsey, and here we go.
Right now, we're joined by Kelsey McCullough, who was lucky enough to be on one of the floats as Queen Amidala. Welcome, Kelsey. Thanks for coming on the Forcecast.
Thank you.
Now, we'll jump right into it. How did this come about? I mean, how did you get to do this kind of thing? It seems like it's a pretty big deal. So,
well, I've been volunteering with Mary Franklin at different conventions for about 4 years, and I came to work at Lucasfilm. And the day before, I was staying with her, and she asked me if I wanted to be in the Rose Parade because she knew I'd fit in the dress.
Well, that's very lucky. That's not a bad way to get the gig.
Absolutely not.
Well, obviously all the build up to it was great, but I'm sure the day was very hectic and you had to start very early. Can you kind of give us an idea of what it was like?
We started at 2 a.m. and we all bussed over to Azusa to our trailer. I sat in makeup from 3 to 4, and then from 4 till 7 we were just kind of hanging out. And then at 7 we got all dressed up, and 7:30 we walked out, and 8 we rolled.
Wow, so there was 6 hours from the time you got up until you guys actually rolled out onto the parade.
Exactly.
Route. Was it nerve-wracking? Did it feel like it was even longer than that?
No, it actually went by really, really fast, because I was hanging out with the Ewoks, the other Queens, Chewie was there, so we were all kind of hanging out, and it was really fun. And then we rolled, and it was over before I knew it.
Oh, she sounds very sweet.
Yeah, we had a great time talking, and she really not only enjoyed the parade itself, but everything that was going on all around it, and she had a really good time, and I had a great time just talking to her.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and I'm anxious for you to hear the interview that we did with the fellows from the 501st, because you really get a sense, and particularly in the portions that you'll hear next week, you really get a sense of just how daunting this was in terms of just the scope of, you know, you're dealing with 3,400 members, and how do you whittle that down to the 200? And then there's some great stories about George Lucas being there. Albin and Mark and I think Darren had some moments with George, some brief moments. And,
unbelievable.
Yeah, very, very cool. And Albin's story is particularly touching, and I was just really, really impressed with these guys and had a great time talking to them. So look forward to that. All in all, I would say that this is a incredible kickoff to what I'm hoping is going to be the year for Star Wars with this 30th anniversary. We got C4 coming up right around the corner, so it was a cool way to start the year.
Yeah, just all you can think of is the best is yet to come with everything that's going on.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Well, and if you're interested in seeing some photos and being able to vote, actually, first of all, there's a great video of the 501st in training. You can check that out. You go over to force.net, and we'll have the links on our show notes. And, you know, help them out and vote for the floats over at the KTLA website. We'll have a link to that as well. So let them know that you thought that the Star Wars spectacular floats were the best in the parade. Well, now we're going to kind of turn the page to some rumors. You know, anytime George is out and about, these rumors start. And, you know, every time he kind of gets in the news, you just don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
This was a story posted at theforce.net, and from an anonymous source, this was received. And, you know, how good those can be. Mm. But, and we're quoting here, Mr. Lucas was overheard by an associate of mine at a private party in Los Angeles discussing the use of new digital technology. He mentioned a Star Wars series between episodes 6 and 7, possibly with HBO. Also, Star Wars episodes 7 through 9 and a probable new director were discussed. Okay. Now, then later, actually, I think it was the next day, there was this story. I believe it came out of the UK. Yes, a British tabloid, the Britain's Daily Star. I don't know if that's a tabloid, but it sounds like
it does sound that way.
Said that apparently George wanted Harrison to play Indiana Jones, but used that cleverly to kind of feel him out about playing Han Solo instead. And so here's the full thing. It says Harrison Ford turned down a $47 million payday to make a new spin-off Star Wars movie. Hollywood legend Ford, 64, snubbed director George Lucas' big bucks offer in favor of playing heroic archaeologist Indiana Jones again. However, Lucas wasn't too disappointed with Ford's decision, as he was already developing an idea for a fourth Indiana Jones movie with Spielberg. A source told Britain's Daily Star newspaper, again, a source, that, quote, George wanted Harrison to play Indy, but cleverly sounded him out about playing Han Solo instead. Harrison was horrified. After that, he was delighted to be playing Indy again. He told George he just couldn't face being stuck in a spaceship with Chewbacca again. Okay, so we've got these rumors. We've got the rumor of, hey, George is just out at a party and he randomly tells some random anonymous guy, I'm thinking about doing episode 7, 8, 9 films. I'm thinking about having an HBO series that takes place between episode, you know, Jedi and then this new trilogy that, you know, yet to be determined.
And there's going to be a new director.
And a new director. You know, Harrison was offered money to play Han again in a spinoff, which I don't even really know what you mean by spinoff. I mean, what do you think about these rumors?
Well, I'll address them as I see them, you know, starting with the series on HBO. I believe there probably could be something in the works with HBO at some point, maybe for the live-action TV series. But if it is, I doubt it's going to be between episodes 6 and 7 or anything after 6.
Yeah.
I don't think that there are any plans by George right now to let to do episodes 7, 8, and 9, let alone hand the reins over to anyone else.
Right.
We've shown we've seen that he's very reluctant to do that with many things.
Well, but the problem is he was also reluctant to release the original trilogy on DVD.
True.
You know, that is sort of the paradox there, where, I mean, if you go back into the archives and look at Lucas interviews, he does say several times that he envisioned this as 9 stories.
Yeah.
There were quotes where he talked about, wouldn't it be great once Mark Hamill gets to be an older man, to have him kind of play the Ben Kenobi character and, you know, kind of, you know, New Jedi Order type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are quotes there. And then now, of course, he says, well, you know, this was never meant to be a 9-story film or, you know.
Right.
Sorry, George, if you're listening, I do that impression with love. But there's enough backpedaling or changing of plans to make you think it's still, that's why it's still newsworthy.
Right.
Because you think, oh, gosh, you know, they also said this about whatever.
There's always been a lot of times where he's contradicted himself. However, I think he purposefully has kept the period between episode 1, when he started talking about doing the prequels and way back when, mm-hmm. and episode 4 untouched.
That is true.
Up until now, because right. he wanted to tell the story as he saw it.
Right. Certain things were off limits. We
right.
know that.
There's so much stuff that's been written post-Jedi that I think he's kind of turned that over to the EU and said, hey, you guys can have open reigns with this. Obviously, mm-hmm. he has spinal say on everything, but
right.
I don't think there's a lot of room to tell a new story.
I would agree.
In the post-Jedi era.
I would agree with that.
At least not for another 3 movies. I mean, again, they could go off the Thrawn trilogy, which are outstanding stories,
right.
but it wouldn't have the same.
Right. I know what you mean, because
you can't touch it.
Right. We've already read it.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have the same impact necessarily, and
right.
It would become, for lack of a better expression here, it'd be like Harry Potter, you know. It'd be like, oh, well, it's not how I imagined it in the book.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
even though it's Star Wars and it's Lucas. Here's what my take on the HBO thing. I still believe that George is a big proponent of family entertainment.
Mm.
And it's hard for me to make the leap that he would, you know, for a cable network that has brought us Sex and the City and Entourage and The Sopranos and Big Love and these shows that tend to push the envelope as far as a television series is concerned, I find it a difficult leap to make that he would launch a live action Star Wars series on a cable network like HBO. Nothing against HBO. I'm just saying that it just doesn't seem to fit the pattern.
It does kind of go outside of the pattern, as you say, but
right.
I always kind of hold on to that possibility that it may be something that's a little more dark, And maybe he kind of, you know, he's said this may be something that revolutionizes television. So
right.
It may take something, someone like HBO, who's kind of been a visionary as far as being on the cutting edge of television series, to produce something like that.
Well,
so,
you know, that's a really good thought. And that's something that I hadn't really thought about myself, is that, you know, HBO does take a very cinematic approach to making television.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, it would fit.
Right.
And they do have family-friendly programming.
Right.
I mean, that's true.
It can still be family-friendly and be on HBO. I mean, I'm sure they're actually probably even looking for something along those lines, because they have pushed the envelope of, late-night adult TV.
Right.
Sitcom, or well, not sitcom, but dramas.
Sure. Yeah.
To this point, they may be looking for, you know, somehow to make them more mainstream during primetime television.
That's a good thought. Well, and as far as the Harrison Ford stuff, that one I wouldn't buy with your money.
No, it started out as $40 million, then it went to $47 million, and I think it was more of just a passing comment that, you know, with George said, "Hey, Harrison, you want to do Indy 4? And he goes, "Well, I don't know." He goes, "Well, we could always do a Han Solo movie." And he goes, "Oh, I'll do Indy," you know, or something like
right,
that.
Right.
I'm sure it's something that took on a mind of its own, but I really don't think George had any intention ever of doing a Han Solo spinoff.
I doubt it. I doubt it very seriously.
You know,
and it just doesn't. It doesn't compute.
No,
and I'm sure. I picture it exactly the way you just described it—an offhand comment, a joke that got retold, and it was a lot more serious the second time it was told.
Right.
And it does kind of bring up this one little sticking point with me, which is just. We were talking about Bob Eubanks. I love Harrison Ford. I love his movies. I think he, from what I can tell, he's a super down-to-earth guy. I've read enough stories about him. But he has kind of a... I just don't like his attitude towards Star Wars. I'm just gonna say it. I don't like his attitude towards Han Solo and Star Wars. Only Harrison Ford could bring that character to life, and only Harrison Ford could turn around and say, it was... You know, I just walked through it.
Right.
And so it's my love-hate relationship with Ewan McGregor the same way.
Right.
Only Ewan McGregor could play young Obi-Wan, and only Ewan McGregor could diss
right.
playing a young Obi-Wan. So at any rate, moving on, Pete, what do you got for us here?
Well, the folks over at Nico Home Electronics offered a pretty cool new product, and just going to give you the rundown on it. It's offering a new approach to home electronics by putting the joy and heart back into technology-driven products. Their first two offerings, an R2-D2 MES, that's Mobile Entertainment System. Features include a built-in DVD CD player, stereo speakers, integrated iPod deck dock, 11 R2-D2 sound effects, and a full-function remote control built into a Millennium Falcon. Now, this is actually a projector. It is shaped just like R2-D2.
This thing
just
is
like
sweet.
Him. It is awesome. I can only imagine rolling R2-D2 out and saying, play back the entire message, and Star Wars popping on the wall, and shooting out of my iPod, because that's where I've downloaded it from. It is the cutting edge of combining technology and your love of Star Wars. It certainly does come with a price.
Yes,
but,
it does. I won't be reserving mine.
No, at this point, I probably won't be able to either. But to get all of these features in one element, it's not that outrageous of a price. I mean,
no, not really. I don't know what the specs are on the projector.
Right.
You know, if it's competitive or comparative, if it's HD or what the case is. So
right.
I'm guessing that it's, being the fact that it's in that housing, the R2 housing and everything, it probably isn't your most advanced, home theater projector, but it certainly is a heck of a conversation piece.
Right. It is very cool. And
there's a video demo you can see.
Yeah, there's a video demo, and you could check that out on our show notes. And they also have an R2-D2 communication system, which is a Skype phone motorized webcam. And it features a replica of Anakin's lightsaber from Return of the Sith that contains the controls for the R2.
Did you say Return of the Sith?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I said Return of the Sith. Did I not? That is a huge Star Wars 4 pop. Revenge of the Sith. And the Skype phone, a wireless webcam, and a web interface to view the camera image and control R2. Now, that's obviously a lot more affordable. That's about $350. But
okay, so what we've got with that is it's a Skype phone, a wireless webcam, a web interface so you can view the camera images, and also control R2-D2.
Right, yeah. So it's your all-in-one wireless over-the-web communication device.
Okay.
So okay. Obviously,
I kind of like the mobile entertainment system better.
Yeah, well, that's why it's a lot more money. you know, these are obviously really cool new ways to do all this kind of thing and put them all into one unit. And, hey, if you're going to put everything in one unit, why not do it in an astromech anyway?
No doubt about it. And our last story we're going to just cover briefly here is that the folks at StarWars.com posted. Now, we did our year in review show a couple weeks ago. Now, it's hard to believe. It just seems like yesterday. These holidays flew by.
Yes, they do.
Man. But StarWars.com put up their top 10 events, Star Wars events, of 2006. So, Pete, why don't you take the bottom five?
Well, and I think they're cutting themselves just a little bit short on this, but number 10 was the 10th anniversary of StarWars.com. I think that's a pretty major event in my own opinion, but, you know, I'm sure they didn't want to blow their own horn a little bit too much. So
yeah.
The next was the miniature fighters, and that is the Star Wars Miniatures Galaxies Edition, which
right.
they you can do starship battles. Road tripping across the USA, which was one of our very first stories here on the Forcecast.
That's right.
Where Vader, Wicket, and
Chewie
were going around the country promoting Star Wars and
the release of the original trilogy.
A Blast in the Past, which is Knights of the Old Republic coming out as a comic book as opposed to just the video game. You know, they went back and that covers a whole new era of things. And the new Millennium Falcon by Atticus, the Millennium Falcon Death Star Hangar Bay, talked about, yeah. Which is absolutely outstanding. That comes in at number six. And that was definitely an event both in your pocketbook and in real. And number five was the outstanding book Sculpting a Galaxy, which took a new step on off of the Dressing a Galaxy and presented all new images on how you go about sculpting the Star Wars universe.
Well, and let's see. That would leave us with the top four here. The Fan Film Awards came in at number four. Also, the appearance of, what is that guy's name? You haven't heard much from him since he was at the MTV Video Awards. Gnarls Barkley.
Yes.
And his group doing a little Star Wars tribute at, I think that was the MTV Video Awards.
Yes, doing his hit Crazy,
right.
Which was
crazy.
Yeah.
See, I know the song, but I have no idea who the guy is. So,
right.
I'm out of touch. And then the green screen challenge over at the Colbert Report came at number two. And then number one, Kick Some Brick, Lego Star Wars 2, the video game. So
that certainly was an event because that's an outstanding game that I still have yet to get my own copy of. So
now I've got it on some good. An anonymous source has told me that number 11 was the Forcecast.
Yes, absolutely.
Of course, we can't verify it. You know, anonymous source that somebody told the Britain Daily Star. You know,
and I'm sure it made their top 10 list too. So.
Where are you going, Master? For a drink.
Sorry about the mess.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Well, as promised, we have the Cantina interview with our good friends from the 501st, Darren Blum, Albin Johnson, Mark Fordham, and Dean Platamura, to talk all about how exciting it was to be a part of the Rose Parade this year. Also, just wanted to let you know, what we're going to play here is just a snippet of a much longer interview that we'll have in a microcast next week. So get to know these four guys here as the Cantina marches on in 2007. Yeah, and we're joining the Cantina with four members of the 501st, but not just any four members. We've got Albin Johnson. We've got Mark Fordham. We've got Dean. I'm going to ask you. I'm sorry. I asked you before. I'm going to have you help me out with the last name because I know I'm going to ruin it. Plantamura and Darren Blum.
Yes, that's
correct. Okay. All right. Well, guys, welcome. And thanks for being here. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having us.
You know, and when we were talking about having you guys on here, and I never realized we'd have four of you at once, which is really, really cool. So I want to take this opportunity. Obviously, we want to get into the Rose Bowl, and it was an incredible weekend and kind of a monumentous occasion for the organization and Star Wars, the whole Star Wars fan community in general. But since we have four of you on and we have Albin on, if we could kind of go around one at a time and just do kind of a quick intro of how you got involved and, you know, and how you all met each other. So, Albin, why don't you kick things off?
Okay. Well, mine's probably going to take the longest because it involves a lot of backstory. But
that's quite all right. Go right ahead.
Squeeze in as best as I can. All started back in early 1997. Lucasfilm announced that they were going to re-release their treasured trilogy. This time with restored scenes and new effects, and created this great big wave of re-energized Star Wars fandom. And it was at that time I was recovering from an auto accident, cost me my left leg, and I was looking for an outlet, something to sort of pour my energy into. And a friend of mine here in Columbia, South Carolina, named Tom Cruise, not that Tom Cruise, different Tom Cruise, and I, we kind of hit on the subject. We were both mutual fans of the trilogy, and as we were going into the films coming out, struck up a conversation about how much we love the characters, and one character in particular we thought was very cool were the stormtroopers, the armored soldiers of the Empire. So we were talking about it. We thought, well, you know, casually thinking, wouldn't it be cool to have a set of armor of our own? And of course, at the time, that seemed kind of outlandish because no one was making armor. No one even heard of armor being manufactured. That was just pure Hollywood. But as luck would have it, the internet was just coming about, and on a Usenet group we were able to find some listing for an auction for an estate. It was a very obscure listing, and we looked it up and were able to track it down to Dogstar Collectibles out in California. A guy in the Chicago area was actually making it and selling it in California. We were able to obtain two styrene suits that arrived just in time for us to arrive at the Empire Strikes Back re-release premiere, and the reaction we got from the crowds was so phenomenal that we thought to ourselves, this is something we've really hit upon. The reaction to me by myself was great, but when two guys showed up in armor, we thought, you know, there's really something here when you get sort of a group collective going. So next thing you know, we were putting some pictures of ourselves on an internet website we called Attention Block 2551, just to be cute and sort of in the Stormtrooper theme. And before you knew it, he had people like Dave MacArthur out of Winnipeg, Canada, and other people sending in pictures and claiming that they had suits of armor, and that to us was just phenomenal, because now there were actually other people with suits of armor.
Was that a surprise? So was that a surprise to you, that there were other guys out there?
Yeah, actually it was. I mean, we felt like we'd kind of come across King Solomon's mind there with the suits of armor that were being made by some guy in his basement in Chicago, and lo and behold, there were actually suits of with variations in them, so it obviously wasn't the same guy. Suddenly this renaissance of Star Wars was hitting. Like I said, there was a resurgence in fandom, and I think, you know, with the tools in hand and discretionary income, a lot of fans were now armed with the ability to make their Star Wars fantasies come true. So it was kind of bizarre. And
that's a dangerous combination, you know, Star Wars fan with money.
Yeah, and money, yeah. Discretionary income, very, very dangerous. So what we did was we fashioned a rudimentary website that looked like a gallery of troopers and their graduation pictures, sort of after the fashion of my dad's old World War II aviation graduation book, and thought it was kind of cool to have, you know, numbers assigned to people, like the TK number of the hapless trooper in the docking bay of the Death Star, and assign sort of a backstory to it. I thought it'd be kind of cool to sell the idea as a fictional group you never really see, but you think you see in the trilogy, a group that might operate in the background, work for Vader himself, and that was kind of the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, that really took off. And that's the other dangerous thing, is to feed Star Wars fans a really good storyline, because they really, really, yeah, they take off with it.
Right.
And before you know it, they just kept building and building. And I really wanted a community where no matter where you went in the convention scene, you had friends, because no matter where I went, I was kind of out of my element. The Trekkies didn't really have a big welcome wagon every time you showed up at a convention, but
right.
I figured we could devise something like that, and that's kind of what it turned out to be. It's been an amazing surprise.
Well, it's been, to me, I think it's probably, and I was saying this earlier, I think I was talking to Dean, it's, for me, it's one of the most fascinating components to Star Wars fandom, and really one of the things that I know the least about, really. Because it just seems kind of overwhelming and daunting, like, you know, I could never do that, you know. So it's really, really exciting to talk to you guys. I mean, I've seen you all, I'm sure, you know, some of you at different events. So it's great to kind of put some names and some personalities behind these. Mark, we're going to go with you next. Mark Fordham, we have him. And Mark, actually, you know what, Albin, can you tell us where you're from, by the way?
Who, me?
Yes, yes.
I'm from Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay, because I wanted to get to that, too. And Mark, where are you from?
I'm currently living in Provo, Utah.
Okay, and how did you join this crazy bunch?
I think, truth be known, everybody at some point has fantasized about having a Star Wars costume, and I was no different. Costume choice, I had the opposite problem. Looked at it, I was too tall to be a stormtrooper, so I chose Darth Vader. And worked on that costume, unaware of the whole 501st element. I'd actually heard about them at one point, but it was referred to as the 501st Legion of Stormtroopers, so I didn't realize they allowed other costumes or characters in the group.
Right.
So I was out there kind of just independently doing my own thing, you know, birthday party here, showing up at a movie release, doing what I could when I could. But then later did realize that the 501st Legion allowed other characters, and, it was pretty much all the bad guys, anybody with no moral fiber or redeeming value, and I was like, hey, that's a club for me. So, got together with some local people, and, we like to, that's obviously a character, we like to affectionately say we're the best bunch of the worst guys you'll ever know, and, I got together with them and found a very, very unique combination. Unlike a lot of clubs that are more social clubs, I think the Legion tends to take on more of a service club outlet, although there's definitely a sociable aspect to it. When we get together, it's typically, for some type of service project or something. And so it was a great outlet to not only get to wear the costume frequently, not just Halloween, to be able to do it in exciting ways, ways where, you're able to interact with fans and contribute in meaningful ways.
That's awesome, and it's definitely what sets you guys apart from so many other fan groups. Dean, where are you from?
Yes, sir. Originally from Tampa, Florida, moved up to the Carolinas about a year and a half ago, to be closer to Alvin. No, just kidding. I moved up to the Carolinas. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina right now. Mm-hmm. And basically, how did I get involved with the Legion? Probably around 2002. I think it was, in 1999, of course, we had Phantom Menace. And then 2002 was coming around. And I think, for the Phantom Menace, I saw that people were showing up in costumes at premieres. And I said, oh, that's kind of cool. And I think, I may have even seen pictures of Alvin or some of the earlier 501st members in maybe in Star Wars Insider magazine or something. In fact, I think right before I joined is when Star Wars Insider had that big spread on the 501st Legion, which was really cool. And at the time, we thought that was you know, the pinnacle of Star Wars fandom. But you know, as history has revealed, there's more more to the 501st Legion. But you know, I saw that and I said, you know, by 2002, you know, for the next release, you know, darn it, I'm going to have a costume and I'm going to go and do something like that. And so I saved my pennies, and I mean, literally saved my pennies. And I had a brown envelope where I would, like, you know, change from lunch every day. I would throw the change in this envelope and just kept saving it until, you know, I thought I could finally raise enough money for, like, a Stormtrooper costume. That was unrealistic, so at a certain point, it was getting very close to the premiere of Attack of the Clones, and that's when I had to, you know, get down on my knees and beg my wife for, you know, can I dig into the, you know, the joint account? And she was kind enough to say, ah, fine, you know, you can have your midlife crisis early, and so I did. And just like everybody else, you know, it's you know, I found the armor, you know, on the internet just by searching around. It was even before Google. I guess I was probably using, like, AltaVista or something. But,
Hotbot.
Exactly. And, yeah, I found the armor. And, no, wait, you know, this is actually a good tie-in. I got the armor through a guy. I used to run a website called The Tusken Trader. And I used to collect Star Wars toys before I collected Star Wars costumes. And that's actually how I know Dustin Roberts from way back when. He was actually one of the guys that used to trade action figures.
It all comes back to Dustin. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. We should do like a 6 degrees of Dustin Roberts. But anyhow, so that's where I found the costume and hooked up with a guy who sent it right out to me. And you know, I spent countless nights, you know, after the thing. At this point, I had a baby daughter. And, you know, after she would go to bed, I would sneak out to the garage and, you know, play with my Dremel tool. That sounds like a euphemism, but I used to go out there and, you know, work on the armor. And sure enough, I had it done just in time. And, you know, and I was so happy to actually, you know, sign up through the Legion, through the website. And, you know, the first time you see your name on the website, I was just like, you know, it was like the ultimate experience for a fan, and
yeah.
And that's why, I guess, you know, that's probably why I was sort of interested in taking on the webmaster role when it was available.
Excellent, excellent. And Darren, last but not least, Darren, where are you from?
I am from Rochester, New York, and I ended up getting involved. Well, I started Star Wars costuming back in about 99, just before Episode 1 came out.
Mm-hmm.
I put together a Darth Maul costume to wear to the premiere, but at the time I wasn't aware that the 501st Legion was out there. I first ran into them in 2002 at a convention in Pittsburgh Comic Con, and then shortly thereafter I saw them at Celebration 2 in Indianapolis, and it took me a while before I got around to signing up. You know, I didn't think that they had other members in my area, and it wasn't until I actually ran into some other people locally that I found out had costumes that we decided that we'd join up, and I've been really glad that I did, and I've, you know, gotten quite involved with the group and really improved, you know, the quality of my own costume now that I've gotten to interact with other people and understand, you know, what level of detail they've put into their costumes. And I've also added some other costumes to my collection, both a Tusken Raider and a Stormtrooper. So
there you have it, the interview with the 501st. If you want to catch the full interview, make sure you keep checking the feed, keep checking theforce.net. Next week we'll have that for you in a microcast. So great guys, and you haven't heard anything yet, so make sure you tune in.
The Forcecast. Your weekly dose of Star Wars news and much more.
And we have some great Star Wars tales for you this week. In fact, we have Star Wars voicemails. Finally, we're getting some more voicemails. That voicemail number, for those of you, is 330-871-4TFN. N, like, you know, theforce.net, TFN. That's 330-871-4TFN. Or if you're on Skype, and why not? It's free, for crying out loud. At least Skype to Skype now is free. You can look for us and add us to your favorites. We are ForceCast. So anyway, we're going to go off to Bill from Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm Bill from Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania. Star Wars is older than me, barely. I was born in April of 1978. One of the earliest things I can remember of any of my life is going to see Empire. It's just a little bit, just images, really, feelings. I had a ham and cheese sandwich for lunch, and we got to the theater late, arriving during the Wampa scene. That's the earliest I remember, although my mom relates the story of me, maybe 2 years old, watching Star Wars on HBO, absolutely transfixed, a slowly dissolving and uneaten Twizzler clutched in my hand. My Star Wars tale takes place 20 years later in college. The Friends of Ganser Library at Millersville University sponsored a literary collection contest. Top prize was $200. I proudly entered my collection of Star Wars novels. I set up a display that included what I deemed to be the most important books, such as the First Timothy Zahn trilogy, and comics such as Dark Empire, as well as a vintage AT-AT and articles about the impending prequels. I earned many a compliment while setting up the display, and when surveying the competition, I thought I had it all locked up. I wish I had a happy ending, but like Empire, this tale ends on a down note. I earned second prize and $150, losing to a collection of 100-year-old books and random maps of the Niagara River. Little did I know that the judging would be done not by the Friends of Ganser Library, but apparently it was the Friends of Helen Ganser herself, and they were drawn to the books as old as them. I've gotten over the defeat and take solace knowing that the $150 was promptly reinvested in more Star Wars books. Keep up the great work, guys, especially the U items. Happy 30th anniversary of Star Wars.
And thank you, Bill, for that.
Happy 30th anniversary of Star Wars to you as well.
There's so much more exciting, I think, when we get them through voicemail. I mean, I don't want to take it away from when you email us, by all means, at podcast@theforce.net. But if you have the means to just dial us up or Skype us a voicemail, it's just I just love hearing the voices of our listeners. So here's another one. This is a great story. Mark from Illinois. Take it away, Mark.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mark Barbine from Round Lake, Illinois. Just giving you guys a shout-out here. On my way home, listening to the ForceCast as always from work, and got a little Star Wars tale of my own. 2 years ago, I helped out with the official picks booth at the Chicago Comic Con, and I had gotten as my tag for the convention, my name was Matthew Wood. And a friend of mine thought it would be pretty funny to walk around the booth and take pictures of me and tell people that that's Matt Wood, who was General Grievous. And there was a couple times I had to explain to them that I was not. So got a couple of requests for autographs that weekend and had a great time helping out official picks, and just thought I'd tell you guys that tale. May the force be with you, always. Keep up the great work. It's awesome. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, may the force be with you, Mark, or should we call you Matt?
It's always nice to have a Star Wars prankster running around about as well.
A total fraud. Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, those are your Star Wars tales for this week. Remember, if you want to get those into us, please Skype them at ForceCast or drop us a voicemail at 330-8714-TFN. Or you can do it the old-fashioned way and write it down and, in an email to podcast@theforce.net. And we also have some regular listener mail. Pete, what do you got for us?
Well, we have a couple questions from Michael. I believe he's from Germany, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But he does have a German-speaking forum, so he offered us a little love in that, and we really appreciate that. He did want to check and see where he can download some of our older shows. And some of you may be new to the ForceCast, may have just gotten an iPod like myself for Christmas. And if you do want to go back and get some of the older shows, you can go onto iTunes and do that as well, or you can go to theforce.net/podcast, and there's a directory of all of our old shows, and we're hoping to give that the upgrade as well, and put a few more things on there to draw you over to that as a little more often as well. So look forward to that. But for now, if you just want to go back and read our old show notes, which have links to all of this, the stories, and get the older episodes, you can do that.
He had also asked us a question about that. He said, could you provide links to the stories that you talk about? And we do that. I think he found us through a podcatcher and not actually through TFN or Rebel Scum. So I think that's kind of where his hang up is. So if you're listening, make sure you check it out at theforce.net. You can see all of our show notes. We also mirror those at rebelscum.com, thanks to our good buddy Jay Shepard. So, yeah, listen to the old shows. And you don't need an iPod or even an MP3 player to listen to the Forcecast. You can do it right on your computer. We have a Listen Now button, which has a little flash player that loads very quickly and very conveniently, so you can just listen to it right on your PC. Who else?
Well, and we have Bianca, who is Hamburg in Germany as well, and she is also a new fan. And wanted to give us a little more information on talking about the names of the characters.
Oh, we were talking about this, about the translation of the names.
Right, whether they get changed. And she says that all the names, especially of people, are kept in the English language nowadays. The early films, the original trilogy, had some name changes, like Palpatine's title was Kaiser, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
And in the books, especially the earlier books, it was Ty Kampfer instead of Ty Fighter.
Mm.
So, Kampfer. You know, Kampfer.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. So,
I have no idea.
Forgive my pronunciation of German since I've never done it before. But everything else does get translated, as they said. And she said every Sith Lord over there has the same name as in English. So
that's kind of what we were talking about.
Right.
That's right. That's how it came up about the name of Sith, the Jason Solo contest.
Right. And she did say that she had no difficulty entering. So it obviously is open to people worldwide. So congratulations on at least entering, and hopefully we'll cross our fingers for you, Bianca. She didn't say what it was, what her entry was, but you know, it's good to know that there all the names are keeping the same standard, because that almost makes it a universal language. Star Wars can be talked about by anyone in any country.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because when you listen to the rest of the interview with the guys from the 501st, they talk about that. They talk about being there all together, all 200 of them strong, and a great number of them not speaking English, but they still were able to communicate. It's very, very cool. We've got John from Seattle. He just wanted to, thank us.
Hey guys, this is John from Seattle, and I just wanted to say thank you very much for the awesome holiday card. And I think it's a very nice touch for one of the best podcasts I've listened to. So keep it up, guys, and I hope to hear more goodness for you in the next year. Take it easy. Bye.
You are more than welcome, John, and I have to say thank you to my good buddy and co-host Pete, because if you had signed up for one of our contests over the last couple of months, we have been keeping your address in a sealed database maintained by our good buddy Jay Shepard. You know Jay Shepard.
Chewie, take the professor in the back and plug him into the hyperdrive.
And I just thought I'd throw that in there.
That's funny.
Anyway, Jay is the watchful steward of our database, and Pete had this idea of, well, let's send out a Christmas card. And he kind of took the bull by the horns and did that, and it was really, really cool. And so thank you for doing that.
You're welcome, and thank you to everyone who entered our contest and provided the addresses for that, and hopefully that was a nice little pick-me-up over the holidays. Since not everyone can win the contest, we were hoping to give them at least something, and that was the very debut of our new logo, so
yes, that's
everybody
right.
Enjoyed that.
Yeah, take a look at your iPod or iTunes or over there at theforce.net. We do have a kind of a revamped. This is like Forcecast 2.0.
Yes.
We're going to call it. Speaking of Christmas, we've got a little notice here from... he doesn't say who he is or where he's from, but he wanted to comment about the Yoda Nutcracker.
Hey there, guys. You had mentioned on your show that the just listening to your December 15th show with the Yoda Nutcracker, which was $250. My mom is a collector of nutcrackers, and I think, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago or so, they actually had a Darth Vader nutcracker that was also $249, and I believe it was made from the same company. So just so you know, if your listeners don't know, that there actually is more than one out there. So thanks. Bye. Great show.
Thank you very much. So there is another.
And I'm sure there's more to come.
Oh,
because,
yes.
Because, again, they're so unique that there's definitely a niche for people who
collect and expensive
those. Yeah. Well, anything that you can describe as unique usually comes along with an expensive price tag.
Well, that's your listener mail for this week. Keep in mind that we've always got our inbox open, the podcast at theforce.net.
You're listening to the Weekly Forcecast, brought to you by rebelscum.com and theforce.net.
Well, that's it for the first show of 2007. We hope you liked it. Keep in mind, if there was something that you missed, it's going to be coming. We've got Microcast planned. We're going to cover it all. But remember to check out theforce.net and rebelscum.com, because they've got all the news that's fit to talk about at Star Wars. Please visit our sponsor, officialpicks.com. Show them some love. That's picks with an X.com, officialpicks.com. They make this show possible. We want to thank our guests, the 501st and Kelsey McCullough, for regaling us with their tales of the Rose Parade. And keep in mind, next week we'll have the full interviews with both of them, or all five of them, we should say.
And thank you for listening. Make sure to get us your Star Wars tales, comments, and suggestions. We do really want those voicemails, so you can Skype us at Forcecast or dial us at 330-871-4TFN. And, of course, there's the old-fashioned way. It's funny to say that that's old-fashioned, but podcast@theforce.net is our email. And you can also hit us up at the forums at rebelscum.com.
We want to thank Jimmy Mack, our announcer here at the Forcecast. Jimmy, we appreciate all of the good stuff that you sent us. For the Forcecast, I'm Jason.
And I'm Pete.
And remember,
the Force will be with you. Always.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of TheForce.net LLC, unless otherwise indicated.